Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Catholic Link podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. My name is Father Rob Adams, and as usual, I'm joined by Father George Elliott. Father George, it's great to have you.
It's good to be here. Thanks, Father Rob.
We also have a third guest, Father Michael Nimchek. Father Michael was a classmate of mine in Rome and a year behind Father George. We are so glad to have you. Father Michael, why don't you introduce yourself?
Oh, thank you for having me. It is great to be here. I'm a priest of the Archdiocese of Santa Fe, but now I live and work at Mount Angel Seminary in Oregon, and I work in the propedeutic stage here. I coordinate that stage, and I'm formation director for 25 guys that we have in that stage.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I'd love one day to pick your brain, because now I'm a priest on a priest council, my diocese, and we talk about seminarians. I never understand what the years mean anymore. Yeah. It used to be like, oh, pre-theology. I was like, oh, cool. And now they're like, oh, I'm in my vocation synthesis phase. And I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm old and sick, man. Like, I don't know anymore.
The church is wonderful at many things, but naming the stages of formation, it's kind of hit and miss. Like discipleship, configuration, yeah, I know what those things mean. Propedeutic, it's like, okay, what does that word even mean?
Which I always feel like it's some kind of like corporate business meeting. We're like, oh, we're in the product synthesis phase of market distribution. And I'm like, yes. Yes. Yeah. I know. I feel very profitable saying those words. But anyway, you know what's more profitable than that is sainthood. Yeah. So I have heard through the grapevine, Father Michael, that you are related to a saint in some way.
Ah, yes. So last year, about this time, September 11th of 2023, maybe it was the 10th. I should know that better. But my great-grandfather's cousin, Victoria Ulma, and her husband and their seven children were all beatified in Poland. They had given their lives sheltering a couple Jewish families, and Israel had recognized them as righteous among the nations, I believe in the 90s, and the church had been investigating the cause for some time, and there were some miracles, and finally, this past year, they were able to raise to the altars there in Poland.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Literally, you have a whole family of saints praying for you in particular.
Yes.
As their kind of descendants.
Which I frequently wondered, like, God, how can a bum like me be a priest? It's like, oh, I'm being sustained by a family of saints. But then at the same time, I'm like, I'm sheepish in telling people about this holy family that I'm related to. And they're like, well, what about you? I'm like, I'm working on it. Okay, I'm trying.
It's a process.
Peter took a long time.
Make choices to be holy.
No, but I mean, I think that's really cool, though, because for a lot of people, saints are someone that's really far away. You know, they're an ideal. They're almost like just a face on a wall, you know, or like a statue in the corner of a church. You know, saints are meant to be people that we do look up to, people that we can relate to in some way. Now, some of that's hard because of time distance. I'm sure as a formator, you always deal with the like guys trying to be John Vianney. And you're like, well, John Vianney was from a very different time and a very different place. And please don't eat just potatoes. It's not good for you. But I think it's really good that we're able to relate to these people and we're able to see them, well, to see ourselves in them, right? Because that's kind of what the journey to sainthood is all about, is learning to desire it, learning to see that it's a possible thing that we can have.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. That's actually what drew me to the saint that I chose for my confirmation, which was Blessed Pier Giorgio Frassati. He was the first saint that I had, or saintly figure, I suppose, that I had ever related to in any way. I mean, I wasn't related to him by blood, but he was somebody that I thought, oh, the way he lived his life, I can try that. Because it was shockingly ordinary. He would just have friends and try to lead those friends to heaven. I mean, some of the little stories about how he would play pool with his friends, and if he lost, they would get money. If he won, they would join him for an hour of adoration. And just little things like that, where there wasn't this discrepancy between his social life and his spiritual life, but instead he was able to blend them together and not be so distant from the rest of the world that he seemed unapproachable, but to still have this deep, deep love for the Lord in the midst of that. And I remember as a high school student thinking, yeah, I want to be that, because it was just more appealing to me than some of the figures that, I don't know, didn't seem to strike that balance for me.
I still have a pretty strong memory. I think we traveled to Budapest. Is that where we went?
We did, yeah.
Yeah, we went on a trip to Budapest. And I just remember you connecting with people so well and so often. Like, everybody that we encountered, you became friends with. And it blew my mind. I mean, like, by the end of it, I think you spoke Hungarian. Like, you would have conversations with people in Hungarian. And I'm just like, Michael, I'm exhausted. We've been traveling all weekend long, doing a million different things. You know, I'm kind of an introvert, and so meeting a ton of people kind of drains me. And you're out there, like, I'm pretty sure you were friends with the hostess that sat us, with our waiter, with the person at the front desk of the hotel, every taxi we got into. Like, you were like on first name basis with the taxi driver by the end of the drive. Like, I mean, I think it's so cool that actually it was that thing about Blessed Pier Giorgio that really attracted you and that drew you to that, because I can actually see in your own personality how, yeah, from high school you were trying to imitate that and live that.
Yeah, I've never put that together, but yeah, I think there's something there that we forget. The saints had personalities, and we have plenty of introverted saints, extroverted saints, and everything in between, and how, like, we can find a kindred spirit on the other side of eternity that can really inspire us and make us feel like, oh, I can do that too.
Well, and that's rooted in the basic fact that the Lord himself had personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jesus was not a blank canvas on which everyone can throw themselves. I mean, he had preferences and accent and quirks and things he liked to do and things he didn't like to do. And I think that all the variation in saints throughout the history of Christianity is really based on that, right? Mm-hmm. That Christ himself was a person, like a real person. He wasn't just a floating divine teacher, right? Like, he had some, like, he liked hanging out with Martha, Mary, and Lazarus more than other people.
Yeah.
You know?
Speaking of being a real person, we've been talking about Blessed Pier Giorgio, and we haven't actually talked about any of the details of his life. So, Father Michael, can you just tell us a little bit, like, you know, more or less, where did he live? When did he live? What did he do?
Yeah. So he lived at the beginning of the 20th century, 1901 to 1925. And he was born into a rather wealthy family. So his father had started the newspaper that's still a very popular newspaper in Italy, La Stampa. And his dad was an agnostic. His mom was still nominally Catholic, but there wasn't much practice of the faith. Except for young Pier Giorgio, even as a boy, he had this love for the Eucharist. He had this desire to share what he had with the poor. So there are, like, stories of him as a little kid where beggars would come to the door and he knew that his parents would shoo them away. So before they could, he would take off his shoes and give them to the family so that the little boy there could have some shoes, because he noticed that it was cold outside and he was barefoot. And so there was this sense in which he had this natural desire that led him to the Lord, but that he then strengthened it through the way that he acted and the choices that he made. So 1901 to 1925, obviously that's not a very long life. He died, he's in the 24 club, right, of saints that died at 24 and make all the rest of us feel bad when we're 25 and haven't yet achieved the heights of glory. But he had just the one other sister. They lived up in Turin, Italy, but they would frequently also spend time in their summer home in Polone. And he didn't do anything extraordinary in the sense of he didn't found a congregation. He didn't create some kind of institution, build a building that lasts to this day. He just every day encountered the people that the Lord sent him with this great charity. And he was very active in St. Vincent de Paul Society. He would go out and meet the poor and go visit their homes and get to know them, not just as a demographic, but individually as people and as families. He has this great line where he said, Jesus is so good to visit me every morning in the Eucharist. How can I be so ungrateful to not repay him the visit every afternoon in the poor? Paraphrased, probably said a little better, but he just lived this life that by all accounts from the outside was a normal young adult life. He loved hiking, being with his friends. His parents had no idea about how many lives he was affecting, how many people he was really saving from total destitution. All they knew was that he was often late for dinner, and somehow this son of a wealthy family was always short for cash, and instead of taking the train back home from wherever he was, he would walk, and he would frequently lose his coat, and they had no idea that he was giving away his coat, he was giving away his money, and he was walking because he had bought a bus pass for, or a train pass for someone else instead of for himself. It wasn't until his death from polio, which he had contracted from a family that he was helping, and after his death, when thousands of people lined the streets of Turin, that they realized all that their son had been doing. And that, wow, too, is something that I love, is like, I don't know the saints that I'm surrounded by. When I was pastor, I can guarantee there were some people on the pews that I didn't know all that well that were incredibly holy, that we can write books about, because they were just doing what the Lord was giving them to do every day. So, yeah, it was kind of a beautiful, inspiring story for me as a teenager to see this was just a fun-loving guy who happened to love Jesus. I wouldn't even say more than he loved fun. He was able to find fun and enjoyment, whether it was with his friends or alone in the chapel for an all-night vigil of adoration or up in the mountains meeting God there. It was like all of the people, like you talk to people who say, oh, I don't go to church, I commune with God in nature. It's like, well, so did Blessed Pierre Giorgio, but then he went to church. Pretty good. People were like, no, my church is my family and my friends. It's like, well, Blessed Pierre Giorgio loved his family and his friends too, and then he went to church so he can love them better.
Yeah, no, that's a great turn of phrase also, the like, yeah, yes, that, and still making it to Mass, you know, making those visits to the Blessed Sacrament and all of that.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting, just on a, just my experience of being a priest for 8 years in a very mission territory. A lot of the things we learned in seminary about how parishes work, they just don't apply. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't have a giant parish council, or we don't have all these, you know, we don't have a Vincent de Paul Society. It's all me. And, well, we do have the Knights again, which is great, but otherwise it's kind of, you know, the pastor. And I've just noticed a lot of that, what you're just describing is kind of what you have to do out here. You have to make friends and get involved in kind of not church stuff so that you can really, I mean, stay sane, but also try to do your vocation, you know, try to live it out. I remember one of my buddies owns a gaming store close by, and he needed some extra hands, and I was free for a day. So I went and worked in his warehouse for him, and I'm standing around outside afterwards, everybody's on break. And one of the employees had been watching our parish's Facebook streams during COVID. And she told me, you know, they were interested in becoming Catholic, but, you know, I need an annulment, and here's the case I would provide. And I was like, most of the time I have to start off with like, this is Jesus. This is the church. But it was really cool. You know, I'm standing out here in an anime t-shirt covered in dust and been sorting Pokemon cards all day, you know, to have this lady come up and, you know I was a priest and be able to say, hey, you know, and I'm interested in the Catholic faith and, you know, I know what I need to do. And it was just one of those moments. You're like, wow, that's really cool. That's really, really cool. Maybe the things we do actually do bring people closer to the kingdom. But yeah, it's just, I think Frassati sort of embodies that, where he was sort of the head of the game because the church was a lot more established and stronger. But I think that's definitely a model for a lot of guys in the priesthood today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that just that general effect of the idea of, you know, holiness in the regular parts of our lives, right? That we can bring Christ to the world just through genuinely loving every single human being and giving of ourselves generously. You know, I think that's one of the big takeaways from Blessed Pier Giorgio.
And soon to be Saint Pier Giorgio.
That's right.
Oh, do we have a canonization date?
Well, so that's where I'm very impatient, because they teased, oh, it'll be in 2025. And I don't want to book the whole year for trying to make my way to Italy for this this canonization. But they haven't given us a specific date. I think there's some speculation that it would be in the summer when the Jubilee year is, that part of the Jubilee year is for young adults. So hopefully it would be around then. Maybe pray our novenas that they settle on a date soon so that we can make our way over there. But it's going to be really great because it's the centenary of his death as well. His Jubilee year, and his niece, Wanda Gavronska, who lives in Rome, and many of us seminary have gotten to know during our time there. She has been waiting and working for this for so long, and so I really hope that get a date for her to be able to see her uncle that she never got to meet canonized, which would be really great.
That's awesome. Well, I think we're about at the end of our time today. I want to thank Father Michael for being a part of this today. It's so good to have you. It's good to see you again, man. It's been like 8-9 years almost, but it's good to see you're still alive and holy and better than me and all that stuff. Father George, thank you also. It's always good to have you. This is all your thing, but I really appreciate
you. Oh, it's your thing now, man. You're in charge.
On paper. But this has been the Catholic Link Podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. If you're interested in the kind of things we talk about and you want to see some previous material, you can head on over to catholiclink.org, and everything that we've done in the past should be up on our website. In the meantime, thanks for listening, and God bless you.